Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
A couple of weeks ago, Sir Ian McGeoghegan was in studio. He was in town helping to launch the new 100% natural sparkling drinks range, Coco Fusion 100. And you can follow at Fusion 100 IRE on Twitter, social media for further details. So this was obviously before any games had been played in New Zealand. It was a couple of weeks ago. So we talked to him really about his own rather remarkable career and just listing off his achievements as a player. I mentioned that Invincibles tour before the break that Willie John McBride and Fergus Slattery were on. So he was on that tour of South Africa in 74. He was a player again in 77 and then a coach four times, 89, 93, 97 very famously, and then again really when people just thought he was kind of done back again in 09, and he was assistant coach again in 2005. So you add all that up and I put it to Ian McGeoghegan that his line story is pretty ridiculous.
It is, Joe, and I still can't believe it, really. I never ever believed I would play for the Lions. So when I got picked for that tour, it very much, you know, the little boy in the sweetie shop really looking at people like Gareth Edwards and JPR Williams, Willie John and so on, Fergus Slattery, really players who'd won in 71 in New Zealand. So to be in the same room and on the same training field was a bit intimidating to start with, and you think you just don't want to let them down.
I can imagine. And I know in the build-up to that you did your own fitness training and really tried to get yourself into shape, and you were very much the rookie, but ultimately played in all those tests against South Africa. It's just an amazing tour. There was a piece on it last night on Sky Sports, and you start off in that mud pitch in Cape Town and win there, and then it's the Highveld and those bleached pitches. And remarkable, 22 games, a long, long time. Mortgage repayments go on hold. You're very much amateurs and you're unbeaten.
Yes. It was a completely different experience. You were professional in a way, because all we were thinking about was, waking up in the morning, having breakfast, training, and then afternoons off, then games coming up twice a week. So it was the heaviest I ever was as a rugby player, and it was the fittest.
Just over 12 stone, yes. You said you discovered something about yourself on that tour.
I did, yeah. I think you're asked questions, you know, when you're in a country where rugby's number one and also you're on tour for that long, you have to dig deep sometimes, you know, and in the middle of games, third test. I'm still remembering Port Elizabeth as probably the toughest game that I ever played in, and partner Dick Milliken in the centre. And it was just sometimes you just knew that you just had to do things, not question yourself or anyone. You just had to do things to stop something happening or helping something happen somewhere else.
The violence in that tour was quite something, to the point that the 99 call is dreamt up, one in, all in. Where was McGeoghegan when the 99 call went up?
Well, I was stood with Phil Bennett and Dick Milliken watching the fight go on about 20 metres away from us.
Would have thought so.
But JPR Williams was 20 metres behind us and still managed to get into the middle of it.
There is footage of JPR at fullback anytime the 99 call went up, sprinting to get involved.
Yeah, JPR was a bit different, but certainly a bit special as well. And I think that's what you find out when you talk about training before the tour. I wanted to be as fit as I'd ever been, because I didn't want to let these fellas down. And when you're on the field, say that's the bit you find out that actually, you'll dig deep. You're not somebody that will give up, and you just dig deep and make sure things work.
There was a magic about that tour, about that group, I think, and exemplified by Willie John. Just this, even just physically, just such a leader, the captain, and I think it was the fifth tour at that stage. And there's the moment when you win the third test where, just impromptu, the whole team lifts McBride up and he turns to the midweek test players in the stand and points to them. And there's something very deep and special going on there.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, The biggest lesson I learnt from that tour and then took it into my coaching was it's the midweek side that makes the tour. The environment that you grow in, and you do become better players, and I think better people for the experience, comes out of the midweek team.
Yeah,
there'll always be a good test team on a Lions tour. Whether that test team is competitive and whether it works in an environment that is really supportive depends on the midweek team. And you know, in 3.5 months in South Africa, 13 players didn't play any test match rugby. There's only 17 players played in the tests. And Willie John knew, and well, everybody did, there was such a great rapport that the big challenges were in training. Nobody just turned up. Everybody worked hard. And the players who didn't play test match rugby worked twice as hard, you know, and said some of the toughest games, some of the toughest practices were actually in training.
Yeah.
And that really put us in good stead for the test matches and the big games.
It's a complicated tour. People say sport and politics don't mix, but sport is in everyday life and politics is in everyday life. And there's that famous picture of JJ Williams with all his speed touching down under the posts, and behind him the crowd, it's the black end of the stadium, and the faces are fist pumps, cheering on the Lions, which they were at every game. I mean, the Springbok, we know what they symbolised for black players. How much pressure did you come under as a group not to go?
Quite a reasonable amount. I mean, I, you know, didn't know. I was a schoolmaster at the time and didn't know, but wanted to, I suppose, find out for myself. And actually felt that sport at that time, whether it was right or wrong, and politics shouldn't mix. And if, you know, if the sport was right, then, you know, you hope you have the right influence on what's happening in any political situation. And I think it hit me much later when I went back in 1997.
Yes.
And we arrived in Johannesburg, and Steve Soweto, the sports minister, was there, and he took Fran Cotton and myself into a separate room for a conversation, and he talked about the tour and the scores, knew what we'd done, knew I'd dropped a goal in the second test, and just talked about the tour, and he said that tour gave us hope. Now, for that man to say that at that time, you're thinking, for whatever all the reasons for going or not going, there was one very good reason.
And I understand we're talking about young men here having to make this decision. And I think Gerald Davies said, it's not for me.
Gerald had gone in 68, though.
Had he? Yeah. And maybe, he'd seen what you describe actually in your autobiography as the horrors of apartheid, which you saw on that tour in 74. How bad was it? How terrible was it? Or how exposed to the political situation in 74
were you? Oh, no. You know, I mean, there was big differences. Even, you know, you went to Cape Town, Durban, and it was much more relaxed in a way. You went to Bloemfontein, you know, the hard Afrikaner, Kimberley,
well.
Yeah. And it was different doorways, different sides of the street, and the worst side of apartheid, where you know, the separation was obvious, and that was very uncomfortable to experience.
And were you supportive then from across the 80s and through the 90s, the decision not to go?
I think it still had to be the choice. In the end, it was pretty obvious that you know, with the approach, there was going to be isolation, I think. And you could then, you know, understand that. And you know, so I was pleased when, you know, Nelson Mandela came to the fore and the whole thing changed, because you could actually see, I think, the real impetus in what South Africa could become.
So 74, that Invincibles tour, McBride and everybody, those 22 games. Fast forward then to your very last moment, and I'm going to get at you to put on your headphones here. You're back in South Africa for your fourth time coaching the Lions, which is just remarkable, really. And you lose the first two tests, and you've got your final test, and these are your final words to the team before they go out and play, and it's your last time, I suppose, speaking to them pre-match as a group. And it just captures something. I know the Living with Lions in 97, your speeches are kind of famous at this stage, but this really struck me because of what you say to them, and we're coming off the 05 disaster as well, but also it's your reaction when everybody leaves the room. The listeners will be able to hear how upset you get, and they might hear a hug happening, and it's because Graham Rowntree has come back and spotted you in the room on your own, and when he gives you a hug, that's McGeegan gone. He can't keep it together anymore. So we'll just have a listen to your final words to the team, and then I'll get you to tell us what was going through your mind afterwards.
They've said there's nothing to play for. It's a dead series. Mind you what Gat said on Wednesday. I think we've everything to play for, because today will determine what we are. It will say everything about us. And the biggest thing about what you earn in this jersey is a respect and a reputation. And to any person, that's the biggest thing you can ever have, for what you do and what you stand for. We can leave a legacy in this last game, in this jersey, for the players to pick up in 4 years' time. And for 4 years, we can leave something that makes sure when people think about the Lions, they think good. They'll think about you, they'll think about this performance, and they can live with it for 4 years. And some of you might be there to pick up the next jersey in 4 years' time. Some of us won't be. Please, please, give them something to play for, something to understand. Good luck. But play for everything that we want that jersey to be and everything you've made it so far. All the best, boys.
So we'll keep listening. At this point, you're on your own in the room at this point. And that's Rowntree giving me a big hug. You'll have to explain the level of emotion at that point to me.
I think I knew that was the last time I would ever be associated with the Lions.
That's what it was.
And after, as you say, 45 years, starting as that rookie Lion as a player and looking up to people like Willie John and Sid Miller and the other players, and then knowing that, you know, I'd learnt so much from that journey with the Lions over those years, and never expected to play for them, never expected to coach them, but felt, you know, so special to have been in that position. But it sort of hit me, I suppose, when I stood up to talk to them, that this is the last time I would ever speak to a group of Lions, and just wanted to leave the right things, really.
Yeah. And then what chance do you have when Big Rowntree comes over to you, with the hug?
He knew I was trying to hold it together, because we were then getting on the bus to go to the test. And, you know, there'd been a fantastic group of players in 2009. We'd had it was an incredible test series.
Yeah.
And the players deserved to finish. You know, we'd 8 changes, I think, to selection, but it showed how strong the group was, that, you know, here were 8 players coming into a test match arena.
Yeah.
And played the way they did with a record score, actually just showed how strong that group was and how much they deserved a win.
Yeah. A desperately unfair question, but of the players you coached, which Irish players made the biggest impressions on you?
Paul O'Connell, I think, you know, had struck me back in 2005, which was one reason why I really wanted him to be captain in 2009. I think Ireland at that time were blessed with some fantastic characters, Brian O'Driscoll. You go back, there's, you know, even players I played with, Fergus Slattery, and, you know, I go back to Sid Miller and Willie John, who taught us a lot of lessons about, you know, standing up and and just not leaving anything behind. It all had to come out on the field. And, you know, from 74, when you got South African referees, South African touch judges, so you very much had to look after your own game, to, you know, 2009, where it was very professional, television cameras all over the place, and but just knowing that I'd had the privilege to be with some very, very good people.
I read your autobiography, and time is against us here, but it was fascinating. You talk about 74, and that was real amateur days. I mean, that was, if you were injured, you went and queued up to the doctor like everybody else. There wasn't even a physio. To 09, where it's so professional. And 05 is such an interesting point for the Lions and for you and everybody concerned with it. And you talked about the Clive Woodward setup, where essentially there were two different teams, and you're coaching the midweek team. The midweek massive, as Dunico Callan told us about. And there's different styles of play, there's different training, it's not cohesive at all. It just really didn't work. You make the point, it's probably fair enough that it was tried, that approach was tried, but can you give people a sense as to why, when you worked as that assistant coach in 05, why it just didn't work at all from a coaching point of view?
Yeah, I think it had to be tried. You know, we were then almost 10 years into the professional game. High quality hotels, training ground, and trying to put a test side together from week one, really, to have the best preparation time. I think it highlighted just the uniqueness of the Lions, that, you know, people respond differently and find things that you don't know. You hope is there, you don't always know is there when they put a Lions jersey on. And if you don't have an open mind as a coach to that transformation sometimes, and that chemistry that comes out of the group and comes out of different combinations, then you never end up with the best test team. Mm-hmm. And I think all 2005 proved was this uniqueness of saying, look, everybody has to have an opportunity of starting in a Lions jersey. Mm-hmm. It has to be part of the development process, and it has to be one group, one message, one group hard working together. And then out of that, as coaches, the big challenge is keeping an open mind and then picking from what you've seen and what combinations you've seen, the performances you've seen from players, and then back your thinking to say, right, this is the test team of the way we want to play.
Yeah. I mean, you're complimentary about Clive Woodward in lots of ways. He was open-minded about the use of the tracking system, Prozone, as opposed to what you were using. But at the same time, you felt the coaching staff didn't develop a personal relationship with the team. It was too clinical. Everything was in one centre as opposed to getting around and seeing the country. And there was no, like, just simple stuff, which is true in 1974 and true in 2005. There was just no kind of team room where everyone was together, where the physio was, and everybody was in the one room where they could mix. You know, the physio room was a mile that way or upstairs, and the games room was down there. And in 09, you said, no, like, everybody together as much as possible. It's back to the point, we're talking about human beings, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it is. It's about, you know, you go back to 74 and that support that came from the non-test group, and how enthusiastic and involved they stayed, even though they weren't on the test field. And that's why I took the position in 2005, because I was happy to take responsibility for the midweek team.
Yeah, they're important.
And create that environment. And but it needed an open channel that players were in between, which, you know, unfortunately, it's, you know, things separated because we're trying to put a test team together. And I was lucky in the end, because Clive wanted to give the test coaches more time to prepare for the test match. So I ended up coaching an extra game. So I had three Lions team, three games on the trot, which allowed me to get to know the players. I also said, look, I'd like to fly out the day before and come back the day after, so the players got a feel for the area that they were playing in.
Yeah.
And all that, I think, helps, because I think if you understand the country that you're in and its people and what makes them tick and why rugby is so important to them, then you actually understand what you have to beat.
Right.
And that's what we learned in South Africa. Back to 1974, completely different rugby, completely different environment, completely different country. Mm. So you have to become part of the country, I believe, and everything it is and how the rugby fits in that country to say, now I know what I've got to beat.
Right.
And if you understand that, then ultimately you come to that position where you know mentally you're in a strong position to win.
Last but not least, because I don't want you to miss your flight.
Right.
97 is a perfect storm. The future of the Lions in the professional era. Sky Sports, he's been questioned. Sky Sports are on board. There's a living with Lions. There's just an element of showbiz and sparkle about the whole thing. They're kind of a cool bunch. Their team anthem's Wonderwall. You know, there's a lot to like here. In the minute or two we have here, I don't know if you'll be able to get across to me why 97 is so kind of magical. I know it's your favourite coaching experience.
Yeah, it is. And I think 97 developed into what you hope a Lions tour will always be.
Right.
And the reaction from players is what you hope it would be and what you believe it should be. It was an incredible group. Fran Cotton was a brilliant manager.
Mm-hmm.
Fran obviously knew it as well. Jim Telfer and I got on really well. You know, some say opposite. We thought very similarly, trusted each other. And, you know, the support staff were really good. We had a slightly different opening week before we went out because even then, I think Leicester had played a final on the Saturday before.
Yeah.
So we had to look after the players. So we climbed trees and canoed on the river and tried to get the message over. Look, we're a group of people that have to be comfortable in each other's company. And if you are and you get that trust and you get that respect because you understand and know each other a little bit better.
Yeah.
When you get on the field together, the rugby won't be over sophisticated, but you'll have a clarity about what you're doing.
Yes.
But more than anything, you'll have a friendship which comes out on the field. So if somebody needs you to do something, you'll do it. And that goes back to my feeling back in 74. You know, if Willie John asked anything on the field, you would have just done it, or you did do it.
Yes.
Because you didn't want to be second.
Like Phil Bennett with his leg pumping blood and Willie John says, you're staying on. And
yeah,
Bennett says, okay.
Yeah.
So then last point, and it harks back to your what the words you said to the team in 97. 30 years' time, you'll see each other and there'll be a look. What's that like for you now? All of these players that you've either coached or played with, when you see each other, can you try and explain, articulate that difficult thing?
No, I think for players it's different. Dick, it came out of the third test in Port Elizabeth, Dick Milk and I, you know, under pressure. We had 38 minutes of that game, as I seem to remember, maybe not inside our 22.
In 74.
In 74.
Yeah.
And all it was this South African wave. They'd picked nine forwards. They'd picked a forward at scrum half,
right.
Just coming at us. And we were literally just surviving, tackling again. So you didn't have time to say anything. What you were doing is when you'd made a tackle, you were up and looking where you needed to be next, where the next threat was. And I still remember to this day looking at Dick Milliken and him looking back at me. We just had to keep working. And then we break out with 2 minutes to go to halftime, score a try. And then the second half, different game again. We just kept going. And that's where you sort of understand that you're in a different place with a group of people. And, you know, I knew if the 97 team won that second test, that there'd be times on that field when I thought they would have the same feeling with each other, that there would just be that look on the field that they'd remember for the rest of their lives. And then you just remember. And I was with Keith Wood a couple of weeks back, and Woody, you know, a great Irish Lion again, was brilliant. And he said, you know, he did say, now 20 years on from 97, you do. You just look at each other and say, yep, we were in a pretty good place.
Ian McGeegan, a pleasure. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.